And for those of you that don't know who I am or whatever, that's probably to your benefit at this point. I don't know. But I've been here a long time. I just finished my 47th year being here as far as summers, and 32 years as far as being up here and being the one that has the position of overseeing the ministry. And so that's been kind of fun to be a part of and to see what God is doing. I have never been a daughter, but I've been a dad of two daughters. And what's funny is this year I'm also speaking to the father-son, and I've never had any sons. So I have to speak as a son to the father-sons, and I'm speaking as a father to the father-daughter, if that makes sense to you. Because I grew up with only a brother. So I had a dad in my life, or his two boys, and now as I got older, got married, and then I had two daughters. And so I got both worlds there, kind of. And that's kind of fun to think about. I came from Chicago and really was there during the school year and usually at camp during the summer. My dad was the pastor of Emmanuel Bible Church. It was Dave Liska's pastor, actually, if he can remember it that long ago. He didn't have a beard back then. Actually, I have a wedding picture of you that I just saw. And you did have a beard. Have you always had a beard?
Since birth.
I'm thinking maybe so. Yeah, okay. And actually, I'm one of those rare birds who has converted from a Bear fan to a Packer fan through the years. And a Cub fan to a Brewer fan. I mean, it's like I dropped a whole shebang over there. And I think this year I decided I was a Kings fan in hockey, too. So I don't know how that goes, but just thought I'd get on the bandwagon with that. Yeah, I know. Terrible, isn't it? I have two daughters. Here they are. One of them is when we were making maple syrup as many years ago without all the right equipment. And I forced them to help their dad make syrup. And there they are. They're looking really energetic, aren't they, about that? Yeah, they used to like eating. Actually, one of them still doesn't like maple syrup. I think this is the whole reason why. I think they'd rather have Aunt Jemima. I'm not sure. And this is what they look like now as girls that are 29 and 31. One is a social worker down in Milwaukee. And actually, I'm not sure if I'm going to show it to you, but she surprised me since she couldn't be here. She sent a video to tell the dads and daughters something. And it made me cry the whole time, so I'm not sure I'm going to show it to you because I'm not sure that's not a message for me or for you. I'm not sure what it was. I'll have to look at it again and decide. My other daughter is a teacher in Nina at a Christian school, and she helps out here a lot in the summer. She was up in our Canadian camp for a while. And she tomorrow she would be here, but she's running the Wolfman Triathlon this weekend. And so she decided to abandon her dad and go do that instead. And when they're 31, they can do that. They can say, I'm running the marathon, and I'll see you in between sometime. But those are my daughters. Here's a more picture of our family. My wife, Linda, I've been married 34 years. And this was taken not too long ago. Yes, my younger daughter is the taller one and plays basketball and is a center when she plays and enjoys playing that very much. Even though she was homeschooled, she's making up for it all now, she said, with sports, and she will play in the league. I didn't have the heart to tell her she was playing in a Hispanic league where they're all this tall. And so she's 5'11" and she plays center and she thinks that's a big deal. So that's cool. And she's going to probably listen to the recording of this and get back to me on that one. She's actually pretty good at what she does there. So one of the things I really want to spend time talking with you, that's not what I wanted to say. What I want to spend time talking with you about, obviously, is helping each of you understand the importance of making each other successful. I honestly believe that God's given us a pattern in the Bible. That one of the things that we have to do is work hard at making other people successful. And most important is that relationship in the family. Between myself and my wife, between myself and my kids, making them successful. Not necessarily giving everybody what they want or anything else, but making them successful in life. And it's important that we have the mind frame that we actually want to do that. I have found that life is very seasonal. I don't know if you've noticed that, but there's seasons of life. I can remember with my daughter, so oftentimes they'd be a certain age, you know, 6 years old, 7 years old, and I would grab them and say, look, you cannot grow anymore. That's it. We're done. You are staying this age. Why? Because I like it. And I am your dad, and you will stay this age. And most of the time they'd giggle and run away and go, you're goofy. You know what I mean? I'm not going to stay this age. Yeah, but I like this age. I really like this age. You know, and what happens is you go through all these seasons of life. Everybody does. And you may not even like the seasons. You may not even want the seasons, but they're coming anyway. You know, this year we're headed into fall, and Brad was telling you about the rain we've had and all that kind of stuff. It's been unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. I actually went by my house and cut down some big popple trees because I don't like what happens when the ground gets soft and they're around the house because they'll just topple at some point. And what's interesting is the seasons are going to come, and you need to prepare for them and go through them even if you've never been in it before. And that's what happens in life. We get seasons that we've never had before. Never. For example, one day, Linda and I decided we were going to get married. I had never been married before. I didn't know that season. I didn't know how to dress for that season. I didn't know what to do for that season. It was like brand new. You know, then you get married. And then she became pregnant. It was like, that's a new season. She's never been pregnant. I've never been, you know, married to a pregnant woman. So that's a new season. I don't know what to do with that. I mean, what do you got to do? Look up things in books? I don't know. I've never been there. And then there's a child born. Well, I never had that happen before. And you know, even if you have 9 children born, you know, I mean, you never had 9 before. And if you had 10 or 12 or 15, you never had that number either. And everything changes with the new season. But you don't know how to go through it yet. So, you know, we had the first child, and of course that was a different season. Then we had Sarah, she came along, that was another season. And then they were toddlers, and you know, I never had a toddler before. So, and then I never had 2 of them. And then I never, you know, my goodness. Then they got in college at the same time. You know, and I'm thinking, college? What are you doing in college? You're supposed to stay 5. You know, now you're in college, and you expect me to just let you go? And I did, and I remember, you know, thinking, wow, I don't know how to go through this one either. And I don't know how. Here's what you girls need to see, that a dad like me thinks that way. It's like, I can remember, I went and I dropped my oldest daughter off at college, and I was, yeah, no problem, you'll be cool, everything's great. And, it, you know, cell phones were somewhat popular, but not really. And I said, you're not getting a cell phone, no way. As soon as I dropped her off, I went to the cell phone place, bought her a cell phone, and brought it back. Why? Because dads are that way. You see, I wanted to make sure she understood I was confident in her going to college. I wanted her to go. But this was a new season for me, too. This is brand new. I didn't even know how to deal with it yet. I thought I could deal with it. I thought I knew how to deal with it. But I didn't know how to deal with it. And why do I even tell you that? Because here's what has to happen. We as a group, dads and daughters, we need to know that those seasons happen. And we don't need to pretend that we actually know how to go through them yet. But we can tell each other that. Hey, this is a new season. I'm not sure yet how I'm going to deal with this. So why don't we talk about it and figure it out together? Because we're new at it both. I mean, she was new going to school and I was new saying goodbye to her going to school. You know, and then it was new because Linda and I were in the car and we were new sitting there without her. I mean, there's so many things that you do in life that are just funny to someone else, you know, at times. I remember I was taking, we like skiing out west. And we took our 2 daughters out skiing. We were going to teach them. And Linda grew up learning how to, I mean, she went to Switzerland and all that stuff. And I went to Paul Bunyan over here in Townsend. And I remember the first time I skied with her family. You know, they were all like skiers and looked really cool. And I show up with a fur bomber hat and a snowmobile suit. And we're out in Colorado. It's like, oh, brother, you know. How I learned was we got skis. And at Paul Bunyan, which is no longer around, it was in Lakewood. And you could learn to ski. There was a rope tow and that kind of thing. And for those from the area, it was like a kettlebell kind of thing. And you go there and ski. And I remember the first skis I ever rented had leather straps on them. And they were leather boots, and they were like 2 boots, I think. And then they had cables that put them on the ski, and they were wood skis. And I remember the first time down, I had no clue, right? And I was wearing a sweater that my grandma knitted. It was wool, 100% wool that she knitted for me, because I was going to look cool, man. If nothing else, I was going to look cool. So I'm out on the slopes, and the first time down, I have no idea what I'm doing. I was a hockey player, that kind of stuff. I knew how to skate. I knew how to ski. And first time down, man, ran right into a tree. Boom. Broke the skis. I thought, this isn't that much fun so far. Right? So I walked in and said, I broke the skis and showed up to them. And they said, yeah, and they gave me another pair of skis because, you know, that was their policy. If you broke a ski, they give me. Second time down, hit a tree, broke the skis, brought them back in. I didn't break any more that day. But by the end of the day, no kidding, the sweater, I didn't know this, was down past my knees. It was a homemade knit sweater, all wool. And it's all the way down past my knees. And I'm thinking, is this fun? Do I look cool? You know? No, I didn't. It's interesting. So we went out skiing. We took Chris and Sarah with us. And now Linda, if you ever saw my wife ski, if you ever saw Susie Chapstick ski, that's her. I mean, she is like perfect down the hill. Down. My daughters, perfect. Me, ha! Get out of my way still. Because that's how I learned. What's really funny is if the girls wanted to learn anything, they went to her. If they wanted to have fun, they came with me. Because I didn't know what I was doing, but I was willing to do it. You know, right through the woods, right through the, you know, and Linda was very patient. She would go and wait for us where we'd come out, you know, that kind of thing. But the very first time ever, Linda said, okay, she took our oldest daughter, Kristen, and said, I'll teach her, and you take Sarah. No problem. So here Linda is on the hill going through all these stuff, and as soon as she was down a little bit, I said, Sarah, point those skis downhill and let's go. And we did. We pointed them downhill, and all of a sudden Sarah just flies right by her, you know, and Linda's going, what are you doing? Skiing! You know, it's like, oh man, she took over. I never taught him again anything on skiing. Here's the interesting point. There are seasons of life and some people do them better than others. And what you need to understand in life is you need to be able to look for those who have had experience and ask them for help. You can pretend like I did, that I know how to ski. I still go out and pretend I know how to ski. She still rolls her eyes at me. Because there's something about skiing in me that just, I just go and do it. I still can't even figure out how I do it. I just do it. But she is precise. She has been so successful at teaching others to ski. Sometimes we don't recognize the people that we really need to embrace in certain areas. My daughters ski well because I gave up teaching them. They still would come to me for fun. But they know how to ski because of mom. And what's interesting is as you go through life, you begin to realize there's this birth thing, childhood, adolescence, young adult, middle age, mature, elderly. They're all seasons. Being here many years does not make me smart. What it makes me is experienced. There's probably so many experiences I've had that I can help young people with, just because I've had them. After years and years of speaking to thousands of young people, working with thousands of families at family camps, you get experience. It's funny because people think, well, you think you know what you're talking about? Actually, I don't. Here's what I do know. I have a lot of years of experience. And I've seen something. One of the most important things that you young ladies are going to recognize is that your dad may not be smarter than you IQ-wise, but he's got experience. And there's nobody in the world he wants to protect and help more be successful than you. And you need to include him in on that. You need to let him be that guy. Now, some of you are saying, yeah, but he'll come. You know what? Here's honestly what happens. And dads, I don't know if you do this with your daughters or not, but I used to do this with my daughters all the time. I'd be doing something and they would, you know, something I needed to correct, and I'd tell them, look, I have no idea whether I did this right or not. No idea. Why? New season, new issue, never saw it before. And I'm supposed to know everything, so I don't. So here's the deal. I want you to understand something. I love you very much, and I am trying to do the best I can, and this is my decision. And I may be wrong. I understand that. But it doesn't stop the fact that I want you successful, and I'm doing the best job I can, so you need to let me. And they used to always roll their eyes and say, okay. But that's really the truth from my heart to them. I don't really know all the answers even now. I mean, we're in different seasons. They're both living their lives as single young adults in different places in Wisconsin. And, you know, I gave them advice on certain things, and sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't, and I still have that same line to them saying, I don't know, dear. But here's what I do know. I love you very much. I want to help you be successful. My latest one to them, where they can roll their eyes a little bit, is I think that the United States is very vulnerable in certain ways. And one of the ways is by communication. I think that we're a superior nation when it comes to army and that kind of stuff, because we can communicate, you know. And if people took that away, we'd be in big trouble. So here's what I asked them to do as a dad. I said, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, and I'm not predicting anything, but here's what I'd like you to do. You both live within X amount of miles from home. You have Civics you drive, so they get 40 miles to the gallon. When you get a half a tank of gas, I would like you to fill the gas tank. And if something happens that's kind of tragic in the world and I can't get a hold of you, would you please drive home for a minute? Just so that we can gather together and figure out something. I will not control you or tell you how to live or anything else, but I'll tell you what, if something happened and we can't communicate, your dad's going to go nuts trying to figure out where you are and what's going on. Especially, I would look at Sarah and say, especially you, you live in Milwaukee. You live in Milwaukee by yourself. I want to know that you're okay, so leave a half a tank in your car so that you can get up here and we can regather and we can figure out a plan for you and realize that your dad loves you to pieces and will do whatever he can to make sure you're okay. Now, you girls can see I'm even emotional about that. I am. I love my daughters to pieces. I want them okay. That doesn't mean, though, that I smother them and make them do what I want them to do. And they know that I would do that if they let me. But they also know that in the seasons of life, they're no better equipped to go through those seasons than I am. And that sometimes they need to talk to an experienced person who actually cares for them and actually evaluate what they say rather than just push it away. And they've learned to do that. So as we start, I want you to understand that there are going to be seasons in your life. Seasons where you're confused, seasons that you don't know anything about. And just perhaps your dad is somebody who's already gone through that season. And therefore they can tell you, here's what you need to know now. And I want you ladies to let them do that. And if they're awkward at it, if it sounds like, just say, I realize you're awkward at it, give them a hug and keep letting them talk. And then help them figure out how to communicate with you the best way. Because no dad ever has been claiming to be Mr. Communication Great Extraordinaire. Maybe not. But most of the dads that I talk to have this place in their heart for their daughter. And they would want you successful. And even if they're clumsy at telling you that or telling you how, it's still there. Let them do it. And I know this about your daughters. You have the same thing. In your heart, you have a place for your dad, and you want him to be proud of you. And you need to communicate with him. You need to make sure this partnership is developed properly. Because it can be the strongest and best partnership until the day you get married that you will need. And if you never get married, and my daughters are still single, it is still a strong partnership. They still need someone like me in their life to help them. And I hope you see that as seasons. What I thought I would do is then go through what I think is the most fundamental points, I think, that are in the Bible. If I were to come to you today and just share with you four of the most important things I wanted you to know, I have four that I would pick. They're all from one book in the Bible. And what I want to do is kind of couch them in the idea of relationships, if we can. When you think about life, you have to look at it the way God made it. And how God made it was to be interdependent in relationships. In other words, the very first relationship, the very first and most important relationship, is your relationship with God. Now, what's really cool about that is God is a father. See, that's really cool about it. Because he uses that term on purpose. Fathers have a very specific role in life. And God will show us how to do that. And God loves each one of you very much. And the difference between God the Father and your human father is that God the Father actually knows exactly what to do all the time. He knows exactly how to say it all the time. He knows exactly what to teach you all the time. And so, if I want to learn about life, what I want to do is I want to go to the Bible and I want to see what God the Father said And then I want to spread it out to my family, to my wife and to my daughters, and make sure they understand what he said. And I want to live in a way where they can see what God said. And I know that we've only got four times together, so I want to boil it down to what I think is the most basic things to understand that we will need to talk about if we're going to remain strong. I call those principles, actually. They're not methods. They're not methods of being a father or methods of being a daughter. You know, those are all going to change according to your personality. And by the way, I want to throw one little tidbit in here for everybody. If you have not in your life began to investigate different personalities, and I'm talking about two major categories, introverted and extroverted personalities, I would encourage you to do that. And there's some resources out there that are tremendous. But if somebody is introverted or somebody's extroverted, that means introverted means that they are people who aren't necessarily doing the limbo when everybody else is. And they're not out there, screaming loud and wanting to be in a big crowd and that kind of thing. They're quieter. They're like, that's a gift. It's not a problem. And likewise, the extrovertedness, the one who likes to set up the limbo and do those things, that's a gift too. What we need to do is understand how that works. And there is a book out there called The Introvert Advantage. And it's not a Bible book or anything, but it's a tremendous book. And I would encourage you to think about getting that book sometime, reading it, evaluating if there's introverts in your family, extroverts, and how to relate to them. Because it's very important. See, the basic principles are not whether you're introverted or extrovert. The basic principle is this. God gave us really two things to do. Love him and love each other. That's the only two things. If we're not doing those two things, we're not doing anything right. And loving him is actually described in the Bible. It's described as obeying him. By the way, loving others is not described as obeying them. That's God. That's a unique description for loving God, obeying him. Loving others means that we're going to look at others in our life, starting with our family, and we're going to think, what do I need to do to make you the best person you can be? No matter what it costs me, what do I need to do to make you what you should be? Now, that's really cool. If you think about that for a moment, well, how life would be if people would look at each other, if I can look at my two daughters and my wife, Linda, and think, what do I need to do to make you the best people you can be? And they're looking at me asking the same question, how bad is life going to be? You see, God knew what he was talking about when Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind, love your neighbors yourself. He knew what he was saying. And those are the two things that should occupy our time, loving God and loving each other. We don't always do that. We get into trouble because we start loving ourselves. And we want to do things for ourselves. That's not a good thing. Because then we get in the way. So what I want to do is go look at the principles. And we're going to be spending the whole time in the book of Job, believe it or not. And the reason we're in the book of Job is because it's the, arguably, some would argue it, but it's arguably the oldest book in the Bible. In fact, some would say it's 4,000 years old. 4,000 years. It is such an old piece of literature that actually some secular colleges will use it for literature because of the fact of its age, and they know that it's accurate and what it says. So that's cool. But I had this thought once. You know, God didn't really give us Genesis as the first book for some reason. Even though Genesis says in the beginning. It's not that it takes away from in the beginning or the chronology of the Bible, but there's something about the message in Job that's interesting to me. Because here's the thought process. If God gave us Job earlier, if he did, and I believe he did, even if he didn't, even if it's just an old book, why did he give us this first? Why that? What principles are in there that we should learn? How would that help me through the seasons of life if I understood those principles? Would God actually give me a message, give us a message, that would help us all the way through life and make it simple enough for us to actually do? I mean, that would be my question. Because sometimes I make it too complicated. What if we made it simple? What if we made life about relationships, really? What if we understood that relationships are really what's important? Not stuff, not things, but relationships with people. Let's take a look. In the beginning of the book of Job, it started off very simple. There was a man. His name was Job. And you go, well, yeah, we know that. Well, you know what? What is so special about Job, really? Let me read a little bit of the book of Job to you. It says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. The description so far is really good. This is a good guy. He loved God, he feared God, and he turned away from anything that was wrong. I mean, very, very good. There was born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters, 10 children. All right? 3 of them would have been here on the retreat with him. And the rest would have to come to the father's son. He possessed 7,000 sheep. Anyone here ever take care of sheep?
Yes.
7,000, is that a lot?
Yeah.
With no equipment? No mechanical equipment? No.
Crazy.
Yeah, see. 7 would be too many. 7,000 sheep? Just imagine in modern day taking care of 7,000 sheep. He had 7,000 sheep, this man, and 10 children. And I had 7,000 sheep. He had 3,000 camels. Those are not small things. That could be 6,000 humps. No, I have no idea. He had 500 yoke of oxen, or 1,000 yoke of oxen. 1,000. I mean, not yoke, 1,000 oxen. 500 yoke, too. They're big animals. Now, just think of what it took to take care of all this. 500 female donkeys and very many servants. That would be an understatement, probably. So that this man was the greatest of all people in the East. His sons used to go to hold feasts in the house of each one on his day, and they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. In other words, you know, we don't learn much about here, and I don't want to put much into there, but the family was close. They were people who spent time with each other. They wanted to spend time with each other, and they did that. You know, I think as I go through this, and I'm just throwing candid thoughts at you, as my wife has told me, you're beyond being fatherly, now you need to be grandfatherly at this point, even though you don't have any grandchildren. And I'm thinking, okay, I don't know what that means, but that must be another season of life that I've got to learn about. And I'm thinking, you know, it's so hard for families today. It's hard. You ladies and gentlemen have such a hard thing happening because we have all this media going on all the time that we don't look at each other and talk anymore. The average American watches 3.2 hours a day of Facebook. 3.2 hours a day of Facebook. The average American spends 13.6 hours a day in media, apart from work. It's a secular study done by a major university, but it basically was saying, so you understand, if they're looking at Facebook and a movie for an hour, that's 2 hours. That's how they got to the 13. It's hours of influence. You know what we don't do well anymore? We don't spend time being with each other. I'm disappointed that this weekend we have a camp that can hold 300 and we don't have more dads and daughters here. Now, I understand there's a lot of variables, and I'm not judging anyone for that, but you know what we need to do? We need to start spending more time with each other. Every year, I go up to Canada. We have a Canadian camp at 27 miles on the Montreal River up there, and I take men up there with me, and there's no cell phones, and there's no electronics. It's really great. And each year, there's some very high-powered business guys up there. And each year, they tell me, man, this is the best week. We actually laughed, looked at each other. We laughed till we cried about things. I haven't done that in years, they tell me. Why? Well, we not only got business, you get home, you got to do this, you got to watch this, you got the computer you got to get to, everybody can get you 24 hours, you got a phone in your pocket. Yeah. One of the things, this isn't one of the 4 principles, by the way, I'm just making observations. Job and his family somehow spent time relating to each other, even though they had 7,000 sheep. They could have easily been distracted. But the Bible goes out of its way to say that the children spent time together. And we're going to see something about the dad. And when the days of the feast were on the course, Job would send and consecrate them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offering according to the number of all of them all. For Job said, it may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did this continually. Job would actually intercede for his children and make sure that he did what he thought was necessary to bring them to God. See, he was active in their lives. It wasn't like, oh yeah, they're together again. Yeah, we'll do something. No, Job was active. He decided he was going to be active in their lives. When God looked at Job, he considered him a man that did things right. Family, time together. Job cared. Still not the point. Just observations. Here's what happens, though. And here's what I want you to understand. As we understand the universe, and we understand God, and we understand how he made us, what we need to do is make sure we plug into what's really happening. In other words, you're made a certain way. You and I are made in a very particular or peculiar way. In other words, I have to breathe air. If I want to go at the bottom of the lake and sit there for a while, I'll die. Why? I'm not made to do that, so I need to breathe. There are certain ways that I can thrive. I can do real well if I do certain things. I have to exercise. You know, I'm an old hockey football player from college days, and if I don't exercise for a while, I get, you know, really cranky, and I don't feel well. And, you know, why? I don't know. I was made to exercise. Your muscles are made to work, not sit. I mean, you're made to exercise. See, we're made a certain way. And what happens is, when you live in the manner that you were made, that's great. It functions just perfectly. So we were made to love God. We were made to love each other. And if we're not spending time doing that, we're off right away. Life's not going to be okay. It's not going to make sense to you. But then what you have to understand too is that it's not just you and me in this thing. It's not just your family in this thing. There's actually God and Satan. And what we forget sometimes is that this is a reality, not a pretend thing. There's God and there's Satan, for real. I mean, that's what's going on. And when you think about Satan, let me read to you, because this is the first point I want you to be able to discuss with each other. You are actually right now in a war, whether you like it or not. But the war is unique. The war isn't about you. It's really between God and Satan. That's the war. You're just the prize. Let me tell you the truth here. If any of you came up to me and wanted to fight me, you said, Dave, I want to fight. I'd go, really? Let's do it. Why, my brother and I used to love that. We had boxing gloves hanging in the garage. We go out there, and I know some of you girls don't understand this, but man, we go out there and just beat each other up and think, oh, that's cool. You know? And then I played hockey. And then I played football. You know, I used to be in those sports where I just loved that stuff. Interesting. I had a friend who flew for the Air Force. He's a fighter pilot, and then he flew big thing. And I asked him, I said, I think he flew the big plane eventually, the big plane, whatever they have. And I said, so when these guys that are fighter pilots go out, and they go out, do they ever think like, you know, I might not come back? He goes, no. No, come on, they have to a little bit. I mean, it's got to be a bummer to get shot down over enemy territory. It's got to be a bummer. And I mean, you're sitting there, your plane disappears, and you're in a parachute going down, and you're thinking, they're just going to shoot me before I hit the ground. I mean, don't you think that way? No. I said, come on, what do they think? They go, Dave, when you're out there as a fighter pilot and you're going after them, you're thinking, it stinks to be you. You're not thinking, it's going to be me. It stinks to be you. And I go, I get that. When I used to play football, it wasn't like, you know, I'm playing against a big guy. No, instead I was thinking, stinks to be you. You're going against me. You know, I'm going after you today. You see, it's confidence like that I had and still do. And I may be nuts at this stage in my life, but if you said, we want to take on, go bring it on. And I still think I'm going to win. Here's the problem. You want to bother me? Don't come after me, because I like it. But hurt my daughters. Go after them. And you will bother me beyond belief. Why? They are not equipped to fight. They do not like it. And they're not good at it. I want to step in their place. I had to tell you that story because it's exactly what's going on in the universe. God Almighty loves each one of you tremendously. And he can handle the fight. And he'll win. Satan knows that. But he also knows that the one thing that would really bother God is by destroying you. And honestly, if somebody goes and destroys one of my kids or hurts one of my kids, I'm telling you, I'm bothered. But not because of any other reason except for my tremendous love for them. And the feel that I should have been able to do something or help them or whatever else it might be. God loves each one of you, and he knows that if he's going to be able to love you, that you need to have choice whether you love him back or not. Otherwise, it's not love, it's robots. God can handle this fight that he's in. But Satan knows that he will lose, and therefore he starts targeting the thing, the vulnerability, the place that he can win. Let me read that to you. Seventh verse says, "The Lord said to Satan, 'From where have you come?' Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and from the earth and walking up and down on it.' And the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job?'" And I'm sure that's the one guy that Satan was probably saying, "I don't want to hear about that guy." I'm like, he loves God, he does right, he loves his family. That's the one guy I don't want to hear about. And God goes, "Oh yeah, you tell me a lot about all the failures out there and that kind of stuff. Have you considered Job?" And the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? None like him." Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for no reason?" And he goes on. We're going to talk about that part later. Here's what I want you to understand. Satan, if you understand how things happened, Satan was envious of God. In other words, God, when God speaks, things happen. No choices. When God speaks, it happens. God is all-powerful. He's all-loving. He's all-powerful. He's the one in the universe that's in charge of everything. Satan decided, "I don't like that. I want to be." It was envy. That's what it was. I want what he has. But do you know what envy does to people? Envy isn't really, you don't want what they have, but you want to destroy them so they can't enjoy what they have. That's what you want to do. If you haven't understood that about envy, that's what's weird about it. Like if somebody, like in football, last year Aaron Rodgers gets hurt and all these Bear fans going, "Good." It's not like they wanted to beat him at his best. They want him hurt. See, that's envy right there. That's all that is. Or you can apply it anywhere. Someone gets a new car. I hope he runs it into a tree. You know? It's not like you're wishing you had the car. You're just hoping they can't enjoy the car. You know what I mean? That's how weird envy is. And we're all like that. It's like somebody has a good marriage. I've heard this actually. "Yeah, well, wait, it'll be your turn and your life will be miserable." It's like, I'm hoping it's miserable for you because mine is. And how does that help anybody? You know, you get something new, I hope it breaks. Why? I don't know. Check it out. Anyone that's in charge, I don't care. Doesn't matter your political persuasion. Whoever's the president of the United States will get beat up. We don't want them to enjoy being president. Whoever is the boss at work, oh, they fell. See, I knew it. It's almost like good. I remember when my dad died, and I had a great relationship with my dad. I loved him. And I actually had someone at his funeral come and say, "Well, finally, something bad happened to you." And I'm thinking, thank you. I didn't know what to say. I was already grieving. But what they were saying is, "Yeah, your dad's been good. You've had a great relationship. Finally, something bad happened to you, so you can relate to the rest of us," or something. That's envy there. That's not jealousy necessarily. That's envy. What happened in the universe is that Satan began to envy God. You see, when I come and love God, Satan doesn't want me to love him. He just wants to bother God and not let me or God enjoy that relationship. That's what he wants. He just wants me not to enjoy God. He wants God not to enjoy me. So what does he do? He spends his time trying to separate us and get between us so that we can't do that. Oh, he knows he can never get God. So guess where he puts all of his effort? On me. Because he knows that as I don't listen to God, God gets hurt. I'll tell you something, girls. If in your life you decide to not listen to your dad and you decide to do things that would be intentionally harmful to yourself and those things, you will hurt your dad. You can't love somebody and not be hurt when they do things they shouldn't do. You can't. For whatever the reason is. God has given us choice right now in life. He does that. He's given us choice. I get a choice. If I choose not to listen to him right now, he will be hurt by that. We'd like to say, well, it doesn't matter. No, no, he will be hurt by it. He's relational. That's why he sent Jesus in the first place, is because my sins separated me from him. And he was hurt by that. He did not want to be separated. I was not meant to be separated from God. And so he sent his son, so I wouldn't be. The very first thing I just want you to get tonight is that the real battle is happening at a different level than you think. It's really Satan being envious of God, and he's got you that he wants to get. And why do I mention that to a father-daughter group? Because that's what you need to talk about, honestly. Because it's really happening, you need to ask and talk to each other about how is that happening? How is Satan trying to get us away from the most important things in the world? Now, Satan can't make you do something. I don't believe that. He just likes to fuel fires that are already there. So how is he working to get you as a family to not be connected to God? How is he working? You as a dad, just personally. My daughter wrote me, and if I do show it to you, you'll see one of the things she said. Was one of the things she remembers is every single morning when she got up, she could count on me being in a chair reading a Bible somewhere. And that impacted her tremendously. You know what's funny about that? Whenever I got up as a kid, I found my dad sitting in a chair reading the Bible. It impacted me. You see, what are the things in our lives that are keeping us from the most basic principle of drawing to God and loving him, whether I be a dad or a daughter? Those are good questions to talk to each other about. What is it at different levels? What is keeping you from really loving God like you should? And what could you do to help each other do that more? You see, I'm telling you, dads don't listen for a second, but you girls, you have a tremendous impact on your father, whether you realize it or not. There are some fathers that only their daughters can reach. They have that kind of relationship with dads. My daughters have a power over me. They do. I hope they use it well. Linda has to step in once in a while because I'm a softie. But I hope they understand they have this power because I love them tremendously. Use it well. You need to help your dad understand that he needs to be that guy sitting in that chair reading the Bible. Now, girls, you can turn your ears off for a second. And dads, we need to do the same the other way. What do we need to do besides example? How can we help our daughters understand this relationship with God that's so vital? Because it's our only protection. There is a battle going on right now. And all Satan wants to do is break up the relationships that are important. Break up the relationship with God. Break up the relationship at home. Break up that relationship between dad and kids. Break it up. And if you look at our nation, he's been pretty successful at doing it. And then we wonder why we're a wreck. That's the basic foundational fight right there for the relationship. I hope this weekend while you dads and daughters are together that you both come away convinced that you're in this together and that you are going to do everything you can to be the kind of dad and the kind of daughter that is successful in this battle and that you can count on each other throughout your life. And if that is what we accomplish, we've accomplished much. Because many, many young people today don't even know really who their dad is. and they really don't have the influence of somebody in their life that's been through the different seasons that actually cares. And there's many that sit in front of televisions and media and other things and have no relationship at all with the people in their lives. They have an arrangement, but no relationship. And we can't let that go on because it won't yield anything good down the road. So tonight, as you think about things, as you want to talk about things, if you want to talk, and I encourage you to do that, just talk about in our lives, do we actually understand that there is a battle, and what do we live like because of it? And if not, if you've never talked about it, you know what I found, which is one of the things I'm battling in life right now to help people understand, is that a lot of times in families, this kind of stuff is not normal to talk about. They'll talk about the Packers or the Bears, or they'll talk about, you know, but this kind of stuff isn't normal to talk about for some reason. I am trying to make it normal again to talk about this stuff, to talk about what you think about God and what you think about, you know, all kinds of things. In fact, when I was a kid, at 11 years old, I was put in a hospital, and I became somebody who was in a wheelchair and several operations, and actually was a crippled kid for many years. And not only that, I was a cut from a no-cut baseball team. I mean, I was that bad. And I was never more embarrassed in my life, but I was. I remember there were many times where I was sitting by myself thinking, I am a big mistake in this world. I knew different, kind of, but I felt like, you know what? I'm really not very good athletically. I'm defective physically. I'm in a wheelchair. And my dad was a pastor, so I thought, well, he has to be nice to me. Because that's what pastors have to do. You know what I wish I would have done now that I'm my age? I wish that I would have told my dad that I felt that way. But it's not what we talked about. Now, he was a great dad. We talked a lot about other things, but for some reason, we never talked about that. And I wouldn't bring it up. And I can't imagine if I would have just told my dad, if I just would have told him, Dad, I feel like a piece of garbage. I feel like I don't belong. I feel like you got stuck with defective merchandise. I remember that was my language when I prayed to God. I said, why did you make this defective merchandise? I so wish that I would have told my dad that. Because I know now what his response would have been. Because that wasn't true. But I believed it for many years. Because I wouldn't say anything. Maybe I was ashamed. I don't know why I didn't say anything. I don't know. But I want you girls to know that if you're thinking any thoughts about God, about what I just talked about, war, affair with Satan and God, talk to your dad about it. Start the discussion. Men, same thing. Let's make it normal to say things. Let's make it normal to be in an environment where we can say anything. And where when we say it, we know that we just want each other to be successful. And if you're like me, dads, there are times where you go, boy, I don't know. I'm just, you know, a dad. And I've never been in that season. You just asked me a question, just spun my head around. I have no idea what this means. Or go ask your mother. But the bottom line is it needs to be a discussion. We need to have an open discussion again in families across the country about God and about purpose and about value and about how we feel about ourselves and how we need to do it. Because if not, Satan starts using that to start separating and putting wedges between us so that when we get to that point where we really need answers, we don't have anybody we talk to anymore. That's not healthy. Some of you, anyone here ever hear the HopeNet 360 program that we do? We do that right out of that room right there. There's a studio in the back here. And it's dedicated to helping young people understand these principles. So that the bottom line really is, we are relational. This weekend, understand, first principle, Satan wants to get that wedge in there. He wants to destroy the relationship between him and God, between you and God, between you and your dad. I personally don't think there's a more important human relationship at the beginning of life than between dad and daughter. Now yes, husband and wife, granted, that's the basic foundational rock. And after that, you've got dads and daughters. And we need to make sure that we don't lose that special relationship because we're busy taking care of 7,000 sheep or doing something else. On both sides, Job, 7,000 sheep, all those camels, he still made sure he took time to make sure his kids were spiritual where they should be. Another thing my daughter said in this thing that touched me was, I had time for it, she said. And I think if I look back, I was too busy. But she said, no, you weren't. You made time. And I thought, well, good. I'm not sure that I always did. But if I could do it all over, I would make double down effort that I did. Because it seemed like yesterday there were five. And now they're 31 and 29. And on their own. I pray that this weekend is a very special weekend for you. Let me pray, and then I've got one thing I want to ask the girls to do, and then we'll get on with the next part of the evening. Father, thank you so much for our time together. I pray that you will just allow your spirit to work in our hearts. Let us have good discussions. Let us just enjoy being with our daughters and our dads, and make this a very special time of both thinking deeply and laughing loudly. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Good news, we have power.
No.
Really?
No way. It's back. Yeah. Just came on like 20 minutes ago.
Freaky.
So we do not have time to switch over the canteens. We're still running in the dining hall. So that's going on. Hayrides, they're ready for you guys. There's a fire over by the basketball court just for you guys, and there's one over by the kind of the canteen area by the Burt Center over for the guys when they get out of their chapel service. Otherwise, just relax and enjoy. Take as many hot showers as you want.
With lights. With lights. Lights. Forget the candles.
Dance around. Put on as many curlers.
Yeah. Use your hair dryers. Use two of them.
That's right. So
Dave, use three.
And then tomorrow morning, we'll see you guys like 7:40-ish, somewhere there from the dining hall. We'll have breakfast. So
very good. Yeah. That's unusual that it came on before they said. Good public relations. Let's tell them later and it'll go on earlier. Ladies, what I would like you to do is I would like you to get up and I would like you to go and meet your dads in a little bit at the dining hall. I mean, you can just, and then you can go from there. All right? So if you would get up and meet your dads there, I want to talk to your dads just for a minute about something. And then they'll catch up with you in a moment. If you don't know where the dining hall is, follow the rest of them. The Duke girls know where it is. Follow them. They'll make sure you all get over there safely. Do not roam the woods. Stay with the crowd till you get over there. Thank you.